Welcome to Equity. I'm Katie Roof, joined by my colleague Matthew Lindley.
Hello.
Crunchbase News Editor-in-Chief Alex Wilhelm.
Hey.
And our special guest this week is Indy Guha from Bain Capital Ventures, where he's a partner. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
And so this week we have some news about Pinterest. Haven't talked about them on our podcast yet, I don't think, but as everyone knows, they're a major social media platform, and they just raised a lot of money, $150 million at a $12.3 billion valuation. Matt Lindley wrote the story, so he can tell us all about it.
Yeah, so this is an interesting situation where, we talked to a couple people, and basically it sounds like that Pinterest, you know, the valuation is going up, but at the same time, it doesn't seem to be like quite the jump in terms of the actual share price or something along those lines. And if you look back at 2015, why, you know, Katie and I were working on the story a couple of years ago that we got their leak. Well, Katie got their leak financials, and we're sort of digging through them. And it looks like the projections that they put there were very aggressive early on. And when you have to remember is around 2015 was when they actually raised their previous round at $11 billion. So now we might be seeing like a kind of reset of expectations, hence that the valuation is not actually going that much.
To some extent, I mean, the Series G in both tranches was over $500 million in total capital. This is less than a third of that. But I think the numbers you're talking about are the $169 million forecast for 2015. And according to Recode, it came in at 100. And then I heard they were trying to do $1 million a day in 2016. So $365 million, they got to 300. So two missed numbers in a row. What does that mean for the company's leadership? Do they lose their power internally there?
I don't think so. Look, very few companies get to grow at that rate at scale. So 100 to 300, there's no universe in which that's bad performance. And I think if you sort of take a step back, look, valuation is, for private companies, is always art, not science. And you can get caught up in sort of the details there. At the end of the day, Pinterest is an incredibly unique beast. You know, one of the interesting stats is I think 97% of product searches on Pinterest are unbranded. And if you sort of think about all the places on the internet where people put up their hands and essentially tell advertisers, I'm looking to buy something, the other two biggest places are Google and Amazon. Most of the search traffic on those platforms are branded. Well, you're looking for something specific.
Well, so for Pinterest, what's interesting is if you talk to people there, they'll say something along the lines of, you know, people start looking for stuff for Christmas in August or, you know, September or something like that. And they're able to catch potential customers like very, very, very early on in their buying life cycle. And not only can they do that, but because they have such this like wide array of products in terms of, you know, discovering new things and searching for them and saving them and doing whatever, they can go to an advertiser and say like, hey, you can go to Facebook and they can drive your awareness. You can go to Google and maybe it'll get you conversions. You can use TV and maybe that'll get you something closer to the top of both of these things, or you can come to us and we'll get you everything. We'll get you that entire life cycle, and also we'll track it, right? And these companies, like when you're looking at awareness tracking, you know, that's something that the actual outcome of it can be kind of squishy at times, right? And actually pushing them down to buying something can be kind of squishy at times. And that's also one of the main issues with, you know, television and traditional advertising, right?
And you invested in a startup that helps them monetize. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we're investors in a company called Kenshu, which is pretty much the only platform where you can advertise to people, not to channel. So you can mingle your search data and your social data and just talk to Katie. And so Kenshu is a launch partner for Pinterest in monetizing their product search traffic. And I think one of the interesting things about Pinterest is I think they get something like 1.5 billion product search queries, things that theoretically an advertiser could advertise against in a week. So
wait, 1.5 billion in a week?
Yep.
That's 200 and some million a day.
Yeah.
Oh. Apparently, Alex Pinterest more often.
Area editor in chief surprised by social network.
So I mean, yeah.
So I used to use Pinterest, but I don't really anymore. And so I was curious because I don't hear my friends talking about it anymore. But I pulled my Twitter followers, which is not really a scientific poll. But I asked.
Not even close.
Not even close. But I was just curious. And I asked, do you use Pinterest? 23% yes, 55% no, and 22% not anymore. So the not anymore category was the same, about the same as the yes at this moment while we're recording this. The poll's still going. But I think...
this is an exit poll. This is not an actual poll. So
But I mean, it kind of confirms my gut feeling about it, unofficially confirms it, because look, in my understanding is, and I'm in their target demographic, I think, you know, I'm a millennial woman, older millennial woman, whatever. And it was huge with my friends a few years ago, and nobody talks about it anymore. And so I'm curious, because I recently met someone who's high up at the company. I won't say who, but he insisted. He gave me some details about how well they're doing, supposedly, like, you know, some metrics about how much they've been growing and how they've been growing in the United States, blah, 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 blah. But I don't know. I mean, maybe they are growing, maybe they're going to new markets, but it does seem like some of their original users have lost interest.
Well, a majority of their users are international, if I'm remembering correctly. And the tricky thing about going international, and this is a problem that Snap is going to face, and it's a problem that, you know, Facebook definitely faced, and especially as they kind of try to broaden their other products like Instagram or Facebook Messenger or something like that, is culture's different, right? People use these products differently. You know, if Pinterest wants to get into Japan, they have to kind of rethink the way that they approach these problems because of just localization it's going to be a problem as they, like, for any company of the scale, right? And especially, you know, they have to figure out ways to monetize them in addition to, like, having to maybe even tear up the playbook that you had in the U.S. initially.
Well, I think that's totally fair, but most other places you go to discover content aren't as visual. And ultimately, sort of visual metaphors are a lot more universal than any other kind. And I think one of the stats, and I'll probably get this wrong, with search on their platform is folks who kind of start looking for one thing end up looking at 40 downstream pins, because it is this amazing kind of through the looking glass experience if you latch onto something you're excited about. How you monetize that is not trivial, and from a technology perspective, getting visual search right is incredibly complicated. But I think there's a big prize to be had if you do.
Okay.
Fortunately, we have the power user Alex Wilhelm here.
Some knowledge on us. I use Pinterest, as you know, once every 3 years, so I'm really keyed into its current platform.
But He's lying right now. I've seen him use it every day.
Once every 4 years, in fact. Okay, so here are some numbers. Pinterest's MAU number, or monthly active users. So in 2014, it was 80 million. 110 million in 2015, 150 million in 2016, and now 175 million. And I bring all that up because the TechCrunch story that Lindley and Katie wrote back in 2015 said that the company expected to grow to 151 million monthly actives by the end of 2015 and 329 million by 2018. So I think we all can agree that the platform is doing well and monetizing at a quick rate, but I'm curious as to why the company hasn't met its own internal growth projections on the user side. And I agree, visuals are really important and all of this is great, but is this a retention issue or a new user accretion problem? And that's what I'm not sure about. They did launch their first ad campaign earlier this week.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at, because I think it is a retention issue. I think they have been able to find new markets and new people, and so they're still adding new users, and I guess it's enough to offset the users that are becoming less active or not active, but I think that some users have stopped using it. I just don't hear a buzz about it anymore, and not just with my friends, but, you know, I talked to a lot of VCs, and people definitely haven't been bragging about Pinterest these days, which is actually a pretty good rule of thumb. You know, VCs are investing in a startup that's doing really well. They talk about it left and right. And I haven't heard about it a lot anymore. But I did hear, you know, I have heard that they are not ready for an IPO this year, which is obvious. I mean, they wouldn't have raised this at this point. They wouldn't have raised funding if they were going to IPO in the next 6 months. Some people out there in the Silicon Valley think that they could go in 2018, but we don't know for sure. And I think we said in a previous episode, people always like to say next year when people talk about IPOs.
We've all heard, I think, individually that 2018 is the Pinterest IPO time. I don't know if we're all hearing the same wrong thing. possibly, or we're all hearing the same right thing. But given their growth rate and valuation point, another year's growth in a solid Q1 could give them a relatively reasonable revenue multiple compared to some public comps like Snapchat and so forth. Well, it almost works out next year. It does not work out in 2017. I did the math today.
Well, I mean, another thing that, I mean, if you talk to them now, they're sort of, I mean, it's kind of like you said, you know, they're kind of beating the drum on visual search and image recognition and things like that, right? And Pinterest was traditionally known for like wedding boards and clothing and like shoes and things like that. And now they're basically saying like, no, our core strength is this image recognition technology. And that's because our inventory of content is all like extremely high quality product images. And that's why we can do this sort of mixing and matching. So it kind of makes sense that they basically be like, okay, well now we have this technology, right? Or we worked on it and it appears to work really well, especially because we have the best like content base for this, right? Let's get some money in the bank. Let's start, you know, working on this a little bit. And then, like I said, once we, you know, like we've heard at 2018, right, then maybe then they'll have kind of figured it out and basically can go to advertisers. And I mean, earlier this year, they said that they're going to start using visual search to power their advertising in addition to, you know, keywords and metadata and stuff like that, right? That pitch will be fully fleshed out. And, you know, maybe then they'll, you know, hopefully not train wreck their way into an IPO like Snap did, but, you know, they'll set themselves.
Hey, that IPO went live and it's still above its IPO price. Show some respect to the Snapchat losses.
Let's make a mental note that this is the first time that Alex has said anything positive about Snap on this podcast.
Snapchat has a great color palette. That's about all I got.
They also just made an acquisition. They bought Placed for reportedly $200 million-ish. And what Placed is, my understanding, is they help them measure the effectiveness of their digital ads offline. So basically you see an ad on Snapchat and then you walk into a store and buy it. And so how they figure that out, I don't know. But Snap is bought them to help convince people that their ads are effective.
And this is a way for them to essentially prove out the spend you put onto their platform. You really yields real world results. And this is, I'm going to guess, aimed at larger chains of stores, not just the individual mom and pop.
Sure.
Store, they couldn't afford a Snapchat campaign anyways.
Exactly. Okay. So, and I would imagine in a lot of these, there are other startups that sort of do similar things. And obviously these days people have a lot of location tracking on their phones. So it's probably tied to that. But yeah, I mean, digital ads don't pay as well as like some of the traditional forms of advertising like TV and radio and all that, because a lot of data has suggested that they're not that effective. But if they are able to say like, hey, maybe the person didn't go buy online right after they saw this, but actually went to the store, then that's a pretty good selling point for Snap.
Yeah. And the company had only raised $13.4 million to date, $10 million Series B back in 2014. So the exit has got to feel pretty good for the investors. If it hadn't gone back to the well for more capital, I presume it wasn't profitable. So it's probably a reasonable exit, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know without sort of seeing the cap table. But at the end of the day, this acquisition makes all the sense in the world for Snap. It's in the same genre as Google buying the startup that became Google Analytics years ago. They needed a way to help brands at the time. They were just solving for closed-loop attribution on web traffic. They just wanted to be able to show folks that, hey, you spend all this money on Google. How is traffic translating onto your website? This is the same thing in the physical world. Snap is a physical world experience. It's on everybody's mobile device. And what the Place team went and did was they basically shrugged data deals with a bunch of mobile apps. And they have sort of geofence data on retail locations. So when you cross over into a physical location, they can tell that you did that, which Snap can correlate and sort of package up to its advertisers as an effectiveness measure.
So
I think it's pretty smart.
I mean, this might be the wrong word for it, but I think that Snap has been kind of notoriously like chill about its advertising products, right? And it seems
large consumer internet property that didn't ignore advertising until they had to really care about advertising.
Yeah, so you're saying they really care about advertising now. But I mean, so Snap's, it's the same thing as Facebook, right? It's awareness, right? You're trying to drive, you know, mind share. You're trying to do all this stuff. You're trying to rip dollars away from TV, which is where the money is. That's like the blue ocean where you can sort of start taking a bucket and hopefully frantically like get as much water as you possibly can. But you know, is this Snap's, you know, still in a kind of like a tailspin right now, right? Is this this, you know, is this something incremental that you think actually moves them to being a more nominal Wall Street bet, or are they still a ways off?
I don't know if you guys can sort of turn the clock back in your own minds to 2012 when everybody wrote off the Facebook stock because they said Facebook would never figure out mobile. It's impossible sitting on the outside to know the answer to that other than to say there's smart people there. There's a lot of money at stake in figuring it out. And I suspect if they're willing to drop $200 million to add a key piece of analytics technology, they're going to pretty aggressively figure it out.
The difference, though, and I'm going to bring up this point every time someone says that, because I really think you make a good historical point, but not the full context. At that point in time, when Facebook just went public, before even its first couple of quarters as a public firm, it had $1 billion in trailing profit. And that makes it a very fundamentally different company than Snap because it had a lot more space to figure things out. So its share price could go down and it was no danger. Snap is so deeply unprofitable, it just went gross margin positive halfway through last year. And so for them to have a missed first quarter and then to drop several hundred million dollars on what could be a defensive product to keep people from just using their ads at all, starts with a very different situation than Facebook having a problem with mobile, which they corrected very quickly and have done great sense. So I respect the point, but I don't think it's the best way to defend Snap's really chill ads and exceptionally high costs. High costs, super high costs. Look at those cogs. Holy crap.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, but I think that Instagram, when they copied Snap, which is unfortunate, but it was very successful for Instagram when they introduced stories. Immediately, we saw people switching over and not as many people looking at Snap stories and more people looking at Instagram stories. And so around that same time is when Snap had less momentum in their growth. And so it seems like it's not a coincidence. And we'll have to see what happens next with Snap. But I think their biggest number one issue is maintaining user growth. That's the most important thing for a company like that. Because the monetization, they're still early in that. They just started monetizing in late 2015. I actually got the Snap pitch deck as well. And so I was the first to report their revenue last year. But it was a little misleading how they've been able to grow it so much year over year. And it's because they really hadn't introduced a lot of those monetization efforts just yet. So there's still a lot of upside potential for their revenue. It's just the user growth, which I think investors should be concerned about.
Well, so with the Instagram thing, I think that one thing, you know, when they start actually pumping ads into it and really spinning that business up is Facebook's already, well, I mean, hasn't figured out, but it does a pretty good job of offline attribution, right? So they have that going for them. The second question that I have is, like, are we done talking about MAUs yet? Like,
surely you mean DAUs.
DAUs.
Yeah. Well,
That's what they like to talk about.
Well, no, but this is the metric that Wall Street's always judged companies by, whether that's Facebook or Twitter or Snap or all these other companies. And meanwhile, you know, you have a company like Pinterest, going back to Pinterest really fast, they're saying, like, yeah, we have 175 million MAUs, but our pitch is totally different and we can extract way more value from your customers. Snap's probably doing something similar where we have, you know, we're not as big as Facebook, but our pitch is totally different. Like, our engagement is way the hell higher, right? You know, at what point do people stop paying attention to the MAUs and look at Snap and basically be like, oh, okay, well, now they are going after offline attributes and they have a hugely engaged audience. It might not be as big as Facebook, but, like, you know, it's different and we need to be pouring a ton of money into this.
Tell that to Twitter.
That went real well.
You mean the guys who originally came up with that pitch?
Right, because, I mean, they haven't had the best time with user growth the past 2 years, and so investors didn't like that, it turns out. And so even though they've been able to monetize, I don't know. They just haven't really made the best case to Wall Street that they've been able to.
I also don't see how MAUs become obsolete or DAUs or whatever active user count
want.
To
it's the scale, right? That's like you need eyeballs. Scale?
Right. Yeah. I agree.
Your business grows with eyeballs.
Concur. So was your point, when does it matter less or when does it matter not at all that when we track these numbers?
When does it matter less?
I think it matters less if they get to a point like Facebook. Like, Facebook has like over a billion people, almost 2 billion people last I checked, using their site. And so it gets to a certain point where I think people understand if they can't keep up rapid growth because only so many people in the world even have the internet. So then, sure, you can focus more on monetization of your existing users instead of adding new users. But Snap, still has room for growth. There's still a lot of people who use cell phones and apps all the time who are not using Snap. So investors would ideally want them to convince more people to use it. Yeah, certainly not have some of their core users stop using it.
If you're OCD, don't look at Katie's phone because she has like 500 apps, speaking of which.
I have a lot of apps.
Which is a bad sign. How do you, I have like six apps and
they're
too many.
They're all organized in folders and there's a search bar at the top. People want to know how I can find them. It's actually not hard. I have unlimited data, whatever.
Okay, but I want to cap off the Lindley point really quick. So I think, to your point, when does this stop mattering? I think Katie did a good thing, but didn't set a cap on it. So I'd say if you have less than a billion MAUs, MAU growth is going to be a critical way to determine future revenue. It's a leading indicator for later revenues. But once you hit a billion, fine. You know what? Fine. Throw it out the window. All we care about is just, you know, gap sequential revenue growth. But until then, you're not big enough. You know, the market's still so large out there. You can't let go of it. I do think eventually Snap will have to let go of just reporting DAUs and also report MAUs. So there's a little bit better way to compare its users to other social platforms.
And there's another IPO that starts with an S that just happened that you might not have heard about because it didn't get nearly as much attention as Snap. ShotSpotter, which I didn't know much about until I talked to the CEO and he told me all about it. I wrote about it because it's interesting. They have sensors that they put in high crime communities, really throughout major cities, including San Francisco, New York, and Chicago, and they can detect gunshots, and they notify the police within 45 seconds of a gunshot happening. And I didn't realize how underreported gun violence is. Apparently, people do not call 911 in a lot of the times that this happens. And so, the CEO claims that 80% of the time there's gun violence, it goes unreported at first. And so this not only helps them get to the scene faster and help people faster or catch a criminal faster, but he believes that over time that it's going to help reduce gun violence because this could be a deterrent. So it's an interesting public service in a way. They work with police in 90 different major cities throughout the world, and they're adding more cities because unfortunately gun violence is a problem in a lot of major cities. But their business, the numbers weren't that great, I have to admit.
How bad? Are we talking like, you know, Box S1 version 1.0 bad?
No.
16
is,
million, yeah. 1.6 in revenue, so, last year.
Yeah, they
I
had,
think, I don't
I'm
think
reading
that's
my story right now. So according to their IPO filing, they had just 15.5 million in revenue last year and 11.8 million the year before. And they have losses, which increased from 6.2 million to 6.9 million in that time frame. And the thing that's kind of crazy is they've been around for 20 years. They're not new, according to Crunchbase. And so I think, you know, it was a long time coming, and it was a very small IPO. They just raised about 30 million, which is less than half what a typical IPO raises. So not a big IPO, not a great, you know, not even close to as big as most of the businesses that we see going public, but it was a fundraising event. And now they have the opportunity to convince investors that they should be worth more than they are. So we'll see. But I see it as more of a great public service than I do as a real business at the moment.
Well,
but that
so,
could change.
So if you're an investor right now and you're looking at, you know, say SaaS companies or something like a ShotSpotter, right, that sell these services into, you know, municipal police forces, municipal governments, local, you know, local operations, right? Do you put money into it at this point?
I think if you think about SaaS valuations, there's sort of three buckets, right? If you're growing north at this size, kind of teens of revenue, if you're growing north of 100% a year, you could get valued at 8 to 10 times revenue. If you're growing in the 50 to 100% a year, give or take, you could get valued at 6 to 8 times revenue. And if you're under that, it's usually a pretty small kind of 3 to 5 times revenue type situation or less. It can be as low as 2 times revenue. So the short answer is probably not, which is probably why they went the IPO route. On the show, you guys have talked about some amazing public companies. I think this is one of those case studies where it's really hard to be a public company as a micro cap stock. Their market cap is $130 million. Which basically means
small. Very small.
No equity analysts will cover you. There's no long-term institutional holdings of your stock. It's a lot of people trading penny stocks effectively, which is incredibly volatile. And I think today their stock is down 10%, which is an unbelievable movement for a single day of trading.
Right.
And it ripped higher the day before. I mean, it's still above its IPO price.
Yeah, they were up the first
day.
But, you know, we see that a lot actually with IPOs in general. They might spike the first day and then go down the next day. So it's too soon to tell, but I totally agree with your point. This is a very small company. It will not get a lot of attention, except for the fact that it's a unique concept. And so if it were a small, boring company, I wouldn't have written about it. But it's a small, interesting company, so I wrote about it. And so they may get media, outsized media coverage relative to their size, simply because what they're doing is unique and effective. So, we'll see.
I mean, I still wonder, like, what the market is for startups going after these, like, municipal services, right? I mean, if you're a startup that's handling, like, for example, the cloud on cloud company that we're about to talk about, Tentree. if you're focusing on things that, you know, have to be on premise or, like, sort of plug into all these, like, archaic systems and things like that, and you're trying to quote unquote simplify these things, like, working with municipalities is hard as hell, right?
Sure, but it depends on how valuable is the problem you're solving, right? I mean, Palantir, a huge chunk of their revenue is local municipalities and governments. They're able to charge millions of dollars for their product.
Is that where all my tax dollars go?
Joe Lonsdale.
Oh, I want to point out that something very important just happened on the show. After 13 episodes of PG family-friendly entertainment suitable for a Disney class clown, Matthew Lindley has crossed the profanity barrier.
Twice. Two different.
In rapid succession. He is a failure and a fraud and is fired from the show.
All right, I'll show myself out.
On that note, new topic. Tentree filed for their IPO last week, like around the time we were recording the podcast, so we didn't talk about them yet, and we wanted to, but we wanted to start with their very handy explanation of what they do.
Oh, yes.
So, Alex can read that.
Yeah, so we prepped for this show really hard, as you know, and so we read a whole paragraph about Tentree from their S-1, and we couldn't really make heads or tails of it, so we're going to leave it to you, or the listener, to unpack this for us. So here is the company overview from the S-1. Our mission is to provide large organizations and cloud service providers with an enterprise cloud platform that offers public cloud capabilities inside their own data centers and that can also connect to public cloud services. No commas in that entire sentence. Next sentence. Our highly differentiated and extensible enterprise cloud platform combines cloud management software, web services, and a range of all-flash storage systems. If you know what that means, you win.
There's a lot of cloud.
Please email alex@crunchbase.news.
That doesn't actually go to me, so that's fine. But yeah, it's apparently this is when you took the cloud and you put it in your cloud, but it's not really a cloud, but it hooks up to the cloud, roughly.
Yeah, so they also do flash storage, which it sounds like they didn't really mention in there.
They did it at the end.
I was so distracted by all the cloud stuff.
Actually, it was so boring you fell asleep in the middle of the sentence and you missed it.
I think they're trying to emphasize the cloud part because they think investors are more bullish on cloud. So they really hammered home that point about the cloud. But yeah, they compete with Nutanix. They compete with Pure Storage. They compete with a lot of different companies. But those are two companies that more or less recently went public. And both of them have had a tough time in the public markets. Yeah, if investors view them as comparables, that's not the best sign. But I think a concerning thing is they're actual financials. I wrote this story on this. They brought in $125.1 million in revenue for the latest year, but their losses were almost that big. They were a negative $105.8 million. So that's a lot. But the year before, revenue was $86 million and losses were even bigger than their revenues at $100.1 million. So financials don't look great, even though the losses are narrowing relative to their revenue, but it's still pretty big losses.
Let's pick a multiple that makes us look good.
0.2. Can I just add a small addition to that? So if you look at their actual quarterly results breakdown, which is on page 72 of the S-1, if you want to read along, and you take a look at their revenue change from the January 31 quarter in 16 to the April 30 quarter in 16 as well, you'll note a sequential revenue decline, which is a very bad thing in an S-1. one if you want to show a growth story to investors. And adding to that, not only did revenue decline quarter to quarter there, it actually declined further than the quarter preceding. So their April 30 quarter result was so bad, it put them all the way back to their July 31, 2015 quarter. So this shows a lot of variability in their product revenue lines. That's just really uncomfortable, I think, looking at the company long term.
Yeah, and if you're an enterprise,
get worried.
If you're an enterprise company, that's the last thing you want, right? Like you want predictable revenue growth with a predictable valuation and predictable multiples and all that kind of stuff. And that's why, you know, for every crazy, you know, 20 billion gazillion dollar IPO that you see from like a, you know, Snap or maybe Uber or maybe Pinterest next year or something like that, you have like 20 enterprise IPOs that go public at like $1 billion or something like that, right? So this obviously does not look very good.
Yeah, I mean, I think not to pile in here, but one of the challenging things with their numbers is if you look at sort of their gross margin on in any given quarter relative to what they spent on sales and marketing, they basically get something like 60 or 70 cents of gross margin for the money they spend selling that gross margin, which means it'll take you a year and a half to earn that back, right? Or a quarter and a half. Sorry, is that right? You can edit this later, right?
Yeah.
We're not going to, but we could, yes.
Perfect.
The point is the payback period is going to be a really long time. You're spending that much of your new revenue on actually accreting that revenue to your top line.
Exactly right.
There we go.
But at the same time, you know, I think that they're hoping to take advantage of a major replacement cycle in data centers and the way people manage cloud infrastructure. It's not a winner-take-all market. And while some of the other companies in the category have had a tough time as public companies, it's a great time to get more capital into the business and take advantage of an IPO window.
But they do have some good investors. They have NEA, Silver Lake, Insight Venture Partners, and Lightspeed, which has had an amazing track record lately with IPOs, and some big clients like Sony, Carlyle, MillerCoors. But we'll see how that goes. Thanks for tuning in. Come back next week.
All right, everyone. We want to say a special thanks to our producer, TechCrunch's own Christopher Gates, our executive producer, Henry Picavet. Thank you to Katie Roof. Thank you to Matthew Lindley. And thank you to you for leaving us that 5-star iTunes review. That's Equity. We'll see you all next Friday. Hey, everyone. Thank you all for listening. We wanted to give a couple shout-outs to our friends on Twitter who broke down the Tentree product offering for us. I know we joked that we couldn't get it, but everyone else is a lot smarter than we are, so here are a couple of actual encapsulations of what the hell is going on. So from Colin, and this is a quote, "I think it means you can pool server resources with little management and just plug in your own new racks with little config to add to your resource pool and, in tandem, increase resources by relying on external cloud services." Now, Colin may be correct, but that doesn't actually help. So we're going to go ahead and turn a page over to David Gershgorn, who says, quote, "They're going to turn your servers into servers." Again, not the most helpful thing. Oh, and he also adds, "For money? Maybe." Moving along, we have Adrian Chi, who says, "It's basically a hybrid cloud offering that seems to offer a high degree of flexibility to switch between virtual, private, and public. That makes some sense." But the winner is Jason Howard, who says, quote, "Yo, dog, we hear you like spending money on stuff, so we're putting a cloud in your cloud so you can cloud while it's cloudy." This has been Equity. Thank you.